In a black star-sprinkled sky, we soar backward over Earth. Massive block letters of gold and silver orbit into view. The continents show the speckled electrified glow of hundreds of cities. The Earth eclipses the sun, and a massive word hovers front and center. Universal, a Comcast company.
A green light flares horizontally. At its center, a cube-shaped prism forms. It twirls closer, spraying a fan of rainbow light. Streaks form letters of a logo, STX Films. A large letter M appears above the words Madison Wells Media. The letters recede into a repeating sequence of W and M, MWM Studios. A burst of golden light diminishes, revealing gold letters and Chinese characters. H Brothers.
But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. He is the servant of God, an avenger who carries out God's wrath on the wrongful.
A young boy sits among grieving men and women.
I often thought of my friend.
A tear stains his cheek.
Officer Reginald Dean Davis. When I would read Romans 13:4.
Photos flank a casket.
That he punished two of the three men who attacked him before he himself was killed means I will never think of anyone else ever again. When I read or speak this verse, he died protecting his family, his friends, and this city. He was a servant of God.
The boy eyes a mural of God.
I assuage my rage that a third man escaped by trying to remind myself of a few things. First, Reginald found a woman.
The boy turns to a woman.
As strong, driven, and smart as he.
He slips a packet of tissues into her hand.
And then I think of his boy, Andre.
The boy lifts his eyes.
And I see the same, sometimes infuriating, fearlessness, inquisitiveness.
Outside, police officers salute the casket as it is carried to the hearse.
I know it may not feel like it now, but you got more from your father, Andre, in 13 years than most men will in a lifetime. He taught you to follow your conscience, to not take anyone else's word about what is right and wrong, to find a just code in an often cruel world.
Andre watches from the church doorway, holding his father's peaked cap. Words appear against a New York City skyline. 19 years later, 5:25 p.m. Manhattan.
Thank you for making time for IA at the end of your shift.
I didn't have a choice.
In a conference room.
You could choose not to be a cop.
Being a cop isn't a choice for me.
What is it then?
DNA.
At this point, we don't really need to spell out why we're all here.
Yes, we do. Official procedure. Any officer who discharges his or her weapon in the line of duty must justify every round of ammunition.
You've shot 8 people in 9 years.
Good shootings, cleared on all.
3 since you were made detective.
4 now. The one who survived was sentenced to life without.
Do you regret any?
I've been to the psychologist.
That's not an answer.
No, I do not regret any.
Faces don't come to you in your sleep.
Andre's lawyer nudges him.
Justice comes at a cost.
Justice is not determined by you.
But I am the sharp end of that determination.
Says who?
My badge. My oath.
Your DNA.
Andre stares at the bespectacled man seated with other executives across the table and leans back in his chair.
During the Civil War, some soldiers just kept loading their muskets without ever firing. 5 or 6 balls loaded on top of each other. In Vietnam, only 30% of frontline infantry soldiers ever fired a shot. So 10 soldiers in battle, only 3 truly fighting.
Are you really using war analogies here, Detective Davis?
What do you imagine the other 7 were doing?
Andre purses his lips with a hard look. Now, an aerial view shows an elevated train gliding along its tracks among rows of apartment buildings. A framed photograph of Reginald sits on a shelf, the peaked cap propped up beside it. Andre enters, hangs up his badge, and proceeds to empty his pockets. He sports a short haircut, a neatly trimmed mustache and goatee. A woman enters a doorway beside him, holding a glass of water.
Hi, Andre.
How's she doing?
Tired, but I just gave her meds.
You can head home. I got this.
Okay. You know where to find me if you need me.
Andre slips off his coat as he heads to an adjoining room.
What are we watching?
His elderly mother sits watching TV in an armchair.
You left me.
No, Ma. I had to pull a triple.
He sits down in a chair beside her.
I've been here too long. I overstayed my welcome.
He lays a hand on hers.
You can never overstay your welcome.
You're here to take me home.
He eyes her with a slight smile.
This is home.
Don't leave me here, Reginald.
Ma.
He leans forward, gazing into his mother's eyes.
It's Andre.
He gently touches her face.
It's Dre, Mama.
I need to take my meds.
No. You took home. You already took home.
You look tired.
She caresses his cheek.
You work too hard.
Yeah, you got that right. It's the job. It's what I do.
I know. You gotta look the devil in the eye.
Andre wears a somber expression, staring at his mother.
Yeah, Ma.
He kisses her hand. At dusk, a montage of aerial views show the Queensboro Bridge over Roosevelt Island and distant vehicles traversing a maze of crisscrossing roadways. New York's rivers reflect its many bridges and buildings. The city lights take on a muted glow as twilight descends. At night, a black car cruises along one of the city's bridges. 12:13 a.m., Brooklyn. A side mirror shows the reflection of the driver, a man in his 20s with a goatee and baseball cap. He looks at the sign over the entrance to an upscale restaurant that reads Mosto. In the passenger seat, a scruffy, slightly older man sits twirling a coin between the fingers of his gloved hand. They drive into an alley beside the restaurant and turn the car around. The driver parks beside a loading area and turns to his surly companion.
It looks just like you said it would.
The man gives a slight nod. He grabs two machine guns fitted with suppressors from the floor and hands one to the driver. He peers into the side mirror, checking his reflection as he pulls up a face mask wearing a skull print and adjusts it beneath the rim of his beanie. He leans toward the driver wearing a black mask of his own.
Hey, does yours smell like your beard?
It smells like your girl.
The two men share a quick nod.
Let's go.
They get out and head to the back door of the restaurant, the driver briefly glancing at a scrap of paper as he goes. He enters a code into an electronic keypad while the other man keeps watch. The driver pulls open a metallic grill door, and they enter. The man with a skull mask leads the way as they slink through the kitchen and onto the main floor of the restaurant, their guns aimed. The driver scopes out the dim interiors around and behind them as they creep past a long bar. At the far end, they turn into a cellar, where a man in a shirt and tie stands adjusting a rack of wine bottles. They point their guns at him, and he slowly raises his arms, looking tensely between the masked intruders.
Who the fuck are you guys?
We're the guys that are taking your cocaine.
Not smart. You guys are gonna fucking die.
The scruffy man punches the manager and knees him to the floor. The driver holds his companion back, and the two train their weapons on the fallen man.
Where is it?
Freezer. Downstairs.
We need a key?
The manager reaches into his pocket and holds up the keys. The driver grabs them and hands them to his accomplice, who steps past the manager to the end of the hallway and down a flight of stairs. The manager pulls himself to his feet.
It's two of you?
He leans against a nearby rack and checks his watch.
You're gonna be here all night?
The driver keeps his unwavering gaze on the manager. Downstairs, the driver shoves him across a cramped storage room.
Move!
Joining his partner in front of an open walk-in freezer, the driver looks inside to see a shelf stacked high with red plastic-wrapped bundles.
That's not 30 keys. It's 300. Somebody fucked up.
Shut up, on your knees.
Jesus.
The manager complies. The driver grabs a knife from a steel counter and steps into the freezer. He makes an incision in one of the plastic bundles and tastes some of the white powder inside.
This stuff hasn't been cut yet.
Jackpot. Fuck out.
No way, we walk.
What?
We walk.
Small ain't always smart.
He grabs a few tote bags from a shelf and proceeds to fill them with the bricks of cocaine.
You can help or you can watch.
This is fucking stupid.
This is fucking freedom.
The driver glares at his partner. Outside, two police cruisers roll to a stop near Mosto. The intruders emerge from the basement just as four police officers step up to the front of the restaurant. The pair drop their bags and duck behind a couple of wine racks. The thieves cautiously peek around the edge of the wine racks to see two of the officers walk away. One of the remaining policemen shines a flashlight into the restaurant, and the men recoil into the shadows. Now, the two officers head into the alley where the black car sits idling. Meanwhile, the two cops up front spot the falling bagfuls of bricks on the cellar floor.
Car back here still running. Back gate open. Hospital 30 in progress.
All right, we're coming in.
Stay back.
The two gunmen take aim while one of the cops kicks down the front door. As the cops step into the cellar, the skulled masked gunman opens fire, taking them out swiftly. The manager, now armed with a knife, sneaks up on the driver, who turns, shooting him down. He stares wide-eyed at the manager's fallen body and runs past him. Meanwhile, the two other cops make their way through the back of the restaurant. Turning the corner from the cellar, the skulled masked shooter takes down the third cop, while the fourth ducks behind a wall.
Shut fire! Shut fire! Officer, down! Shut fire! Stop!
Shards of plaster and glass rain down on the officer as the gunman continues firing at the wall hiding him.
Ah! Run! We don't want any more blood!
The cop emerges, and the shooter takes him down.
We don't have to kill him.
More coming.
He strides away, while the driver glances behind him, his eyes resting on the slain cop. Now, the assailants load the bags of drugs into the trunk of their waiting car. They enter the vehicle, the driver resuming his place behind the wheel. As they speed toward the street, a police car enters the alley, colliding with them.
Drive.
As the driver steps on the gas, his accomplice leans out the passenger side window, opening fire on the cruiser windshield, riddling the cops with bullets. Another cruiser arrives, and the two officers get out. Abandoning their vehicle, the skulled masked gunman takes cover behind an alley wall, while the driver crouches low behind the cruiser, blocking their path. Bullets from police fire rain down around on them.
Cover me!
Standing up behind the trunk of the cruiser, the driver lays down cover fire while his accomplice steps out from behind the corner and shoots down one of the cops. The driver ducks back down, his chest heaving. He rises again and fires at the last remaining policeman, who evades his shots and returns fire. Meanwhile, the scruffy shooter creeps along the side of the street behind the first two cop cars, getting a clear line on the remaining policeman. He takes his shot and the cop falls to the ground. The shooter fires more bullets into the fallen cops. He approaches his partner.
Move the car.
The younger gunman pulls the cop out from behind the wheel of the cruiser and takes his place. He sees the passenger cop convulsing in her seat, a bloody wound in her neck. Averting his eyes from the gory sight, the driver backs the cruiser out of the alley.
85 Frank? Any units in Moscow, please advise.
He crosses the street to where his partner now waits behind the wheel of the car and hops into the passenger seat. They speed away into the night. The man in the skull mask drives with a scowl.
Don't drive like an asshole.
A traffic light stands in front of them.
Stop for this light. What the fuck are you doing? I said stop.
Just fucking kill cops. Stop.
The younger gunman shields his unmasked face with his gloved hands as they race through a red light. A bright flash from an overhead camera momentarily illuminates them. Speeds onto the Brooklyn Bridge and vanishes amidst the lights of Manhattan. Now, Andre walks down the street past Mosto, the area swarming with police cruisers and ambulances. Two officers lift police tape to let Andre through. His eyes sweep over the carnage. An officer steps up and embraces him. They continue walking together, and Andre's gaze follows an officer being wheeled away on a gurney. His eyes move to a wrinkled sheet covering a body on the ground. Andre sees another shrouded corpse, the sheet soaked with blood. He notices shattered glass on the ground nearby. His gaze moves from the glass to an alleyway. Now inside Mosto, Andre carefully steps past more slain bodies surrounded by evidence markers and pools of blood. He walks on, noticing clusters of spent ammunition on the floor. In the cellar, two suited officers sit slumped against a wine rack, heads bowed. A bald man with the captain's badge crouches beside them.
Captain McKenna. Okay, boys. Detective Davis.
The captain rises and walks over.
Captain McKenna runs the 85. These are his boys that died tonight.
My condolences.
Thank you. It's Andre, right?
Yes, sir.
I never met your dad, but I heard good things.
Thank you, sir.
Andre turns to the grieving officers.
Guys, I need you to get up. I'm sitting in my crime scene.
They glare at Andre.
Come on. He's got a job to do.
They get to their feet and shuffle out. One of them stares daggers at Andre as he passes.
It's okay, Kelly.
Andre pulls on a pair of latex gloves as he continues studying the crime scene.
I heard you were with IA today.
Andre turns to McKenna.
And I'd fucking love it if you were right back there tomorrow.
McKenna stares them dead in the eye, nodding slightly.
If they give me cause.
Cause?
McKenna points at the dead cops.
Here's your fucking cause right there, okay?
All right, guys.
You understand what I'm saying?
Give me the room, man.
Your fucking cause times seven lying dead out there in the fucking street.
Mac.
The motherfuckers are giving you all the reason you need.
Mac!
You understand?
You're not the only one hurting here. You're in public.
Yeah, the public, who never fucking sees shit when a cop goes down.
Lower your voice.
Well, what are their names?
McKenna's expression grows somber.
Yeah. Jennifer Montgomery in the ambulance. She's hanging on by a thread.
He eyes one of the corpses nearby.
Massimo Adams. Charlie Cobb. Jake Dominguez and Danny Williams. Out on the street is Marcus Fernandez.
What?
Andre stares, frowning.
Marcus Fernandez.
I knew Marcus. We were at the academy together.
Out there with Marcus is Ruben Kaiser and Patrick Graham. Just so you know, they leave behind four wives. One fiance. Six kids. Three of my godkids. Now I'm gonna go wake them up in the middle of the night, let them know their lives are shattered. You know the drill.
McKenna nods.
Look, I fucking refuse to allow these families to be traumatized even more with fucking trials and appeals and horseshit narratives, parole hearings for, fuck, 3-4 decades.
McKenna purses his lips, glances off, and back to Andre.
I'm asking you to protect them from that.
I understand.
Andre eyes the captain.
Why were they here?
My guys interrupted a robbery.
Later.
How much cocaine is this?
Crime scene estimates about 300 kilos before the scumbags cut into it.
How much did they take?
About 50 keys.
110 pounds. That's A1 weight, you're looking at 25 years. 90+% pure, 2 million plus or minus before you step on it, it's quadruple after.
Detective Andre Davis, Detective Frankie Burns, DETF, shall be working with you.
With me doing what?
This is the biggest coke seizure in I don't know how long. Narcotics will be involved.
I appreciate the politics, but if I don't catch these guys in the next 3 or 4 hours, they vanish.
I don't do fucking politics. And she's not the second team.
You can either fight me or use me.
Andre shoots Burns a dark glance. Elsewhere, vertical neon signs display Chinese characters above a murky alleyway. The black car slows to a stop, its left headlight broken. The younger gunman vomits out the passenger side of the car. He staggers out and joins his companion at the open trunk where they both take off their gloves, masks, and shirts.
You good?
We should fucking kill ourselves.
Don't be like that.
Not now. We just kill more cops than I can fucking count, Ray.
I did all the killing.
Didn't they give a shit about the body map, huh? They're gonna figure us out.
We was dark, we move fast. Car's not ours, Ray, it's a story.
It'll get solved, Ray. All right? We both hate the fucking cops, but they're smart. We're gonna figure out our names by sunrise. We need to run. We need a plan. We need money. Fuck!
Back at Mosto's, Andre approaches the manager's body.
Employee?
Yeah, came up whistle clean. No scroll, good citizen named Tom Cheever.
So, Tom took his bullet from just a few feet, noticed the stippling around the entrance wound. And judging from the proximity of that knife, Tom tried to make a move. Over here, double taps, automatic weapons suppressed. I say two shooters.
Where you seeing that?
No one's smooth enough to murder all these officers and hit Tom coming up with a knife.
And one guy probably isn't carrying 100+ pounds of cocaine out by himself.
Probably it could be more than two.
Nah. Look at the shell groupings. One was back there, he hit Tom. The second one came this way.
He moves to the cellar entrance.
And he murdered all four of us. Yeah. Second was a talented killer.
Now, in a different set of clothes, Ray stands flipping his coin as an SUV pulls into the alley. A dark man steps out and approaches Ray and his accomplice. They point their guns at him.
You left a zero off, motherfucker.
What?
I wasn't 30 keys stepped on. It was 300 pure.
What, my fuck up?
Whose fuck up was it?
Park Tyler's, maybe? He put the job out for a bit. You guys got something, right?
50 keys.
You're good.
Fuck you.
I'm changing the deal. You're not selling it for us anymore. You're gonna bring us to Hawk, and we're gonna sell it ourselves. And we're not splitting it three ways.
owe a lot of money to a lot of people.
But me and Ray have to run for the rest of our fucking lives.
Hawk ain't gonna hear new deals.
Yeah, well, Hawk hasn't heard 50 Pure yet. Give me your phone.
The tall man hesitantly hands over his phone to the younger gunman, as does Ray. The gunman walks back to the car and tosses the phones inside along with his own. Elsewhere in an office, an image of the black car running the red light pops up on a computer screen.
Hit. You got a hit.
1:03 a.m., Lower Manhattan Security Initiative.
It's a red light cam. Two men.
Alert everybody. Send it through the mobile unit at Mostyn's.
She makes a call.
Detective Davis. Sergeant Yolanda Bell, shift supervisor at LMSI.
Good to know you, Yolanda Bell.
We got something for you.
At Mosto, an officer prints out the photograph from the red light cam and hands it to Andre. He glances over it and passes it to Burns.
How much you want to bet when we find that BMW? It's burned to the chassis.
Nickel.
From the SUV passenger window, a hand tosses a lit match into the black car, setting it ablaze.
We're gonna rob 660 pounds of coke. You drive a BMW two-door to the job, would you bring just one other guy with you? Would you only take 50 keys?
Burns faces Andre.
No, no, and no. They weren't expecting 300.
They weren't expecting cops either.
They exit the Mosto Alley.
This was either dumb luck or a setup.
McKenna talked with two men.
No, fuck you!
The FBI is here because the shooters are out of the state by now. Half hour since the final whistle.
Please, make one more sports analogy.
If and when we get confirmation that they crossed over to Jersey or Connecticut...
Mayor would prefer that the FBI take over sooner than later.
The mayor shits on us every chance he gets. The fucking guy eats pizza with a fork.
He wants them brought to justice.
No shit.
Andre approaches one of the FBI agents.
Dre?
Twan.
How'd it go with internal affairs?
I'm here, so not the way you hoped.
Like I said, Mary Whipson brought to justice, i.e. arrested, arraigned, put on trial. Not killed in a gun battle, the details which are foggy.
Like the seven behind us?
Who are you?
Narcotics.
Beautiful. What could go wrong? We got a narc and a trigger.
You know, you better have perfect diction calling me a trigger.
Oh, cut the shit, everybody. Now, has the mayor got a stump on this? This an ask or an order?
They're still in New York. You don't walk away with 50 keys of 90% pure unless you have a big local buyer. You don't move it far unless you're into transport. These guys are hitters, not drivers.
You don't know that.
Good enough to kill seven cops, dumb enough to run a red.
What they need to do is sell the coke, vanish. I'm not heading east. Long Island runs out, and it's all accountants and dentists out that way, so I'm a sore thumb. I'm not going to Queens. You don't wholesale coke in the middle class. I'm not staying in Brooklyn, scene of the crime. Plus, it's all pop-ups and strollers and guys like you now. Is anyone left on Staten Island who can move this kind of weight as quick as they need?
Since the days before Gotti murdered Castellano.
What about Jersey?
Sopranos was a TV show.
And upstate? That's fucking ridiculous. Ain't no way to move 50 keys of Yayo in Utica.
Leaves Manhattan.
Detective Davis?
What, you got a hit for me?
911 call. Black BMW two-door on fire in an alley in Chinatown.
Uh-oh, where's Chinatown?
Manhattan.
Feel good?
It does. How long ago was the 911?
90 seconds.
Let's go.
Wait.
Wait, for what?
Everything about these guys, save the speed camera, has been competent so far.
Yeah, so?
They'll sell the coke, catch a train, catch a cab, jack a car, and we're right back there hoping we get a hit from a camera before they vanish, show up in Pennsylvania somewhere.
Good point. Where's the FBI's national source?
Close the island.
What island?
Manhattan.
Burns, McKenna, and the agents stare.
You having a seizure?
No, the mayor will buy it. He's in the low 30s, crime is ticking up, homeless are pissing in front of Tiffany's again, and it's 1 a.m., not 1 p.m.
Anything goes wrong, you can blame us.
Yeah, well, something will go wrong, and then you're all fucked.
We get the concept of sacrifices like quantum physics to a fucking Fed.
The mayor could say he was listening to his commanders in the field. Now, if your boss had a chance to catch the murderers of seven New York City cops and chose not to, this city would never forgive him.
Antoine checks his watch.
Catch them by five.
Wait, is that a yes or a no?
Catch them by five.
You all got balls. Not a lot of brains. Good luck to you. Be awaiting your phone call.
Yeah, hold your breath.
Antoine watches his partner walk away and turns back to Andre.
How are you gonna do this?
Andre faces McKenna and the chief.
There are 21 bridges in and out of Manhattan. shut them down.
A fleet of NYPD helicopters take to the air and fly towards the Brooklyn Bridge, Manhattan Bridge, and the Williamsburg Bridge, their searchlights cutting bright beams of light through the night sky.
Three rivers, close them. Four tunnels, block them.
Marine patrol boats move across the waters of the East River, and police cruisers barricade a tunnel.
Stop every train that leaves the island. Amtrak, PATH, New Jersey Transit, LIRR, Metro North, and loop the subways. Then, we flood the island with blow.
An armada of police vehicles speeds along bridges into Manhattan, emergency lights flashing. A massive digital signboard above a street displays the message, emergency alert, Manhattan lockdown. Now, a convoy of police cars tear through the city and pass beneath a large gilded archway, turning into the alley with the abandoned black car. 1:22 a.m., Chinatown. Two firefighters gather up a length of hose while a crime scene investigator peers into the charred shell of the black car. Burns and Andre approach the wreckage, shining their flashlights.
Want to ditch a car, you drive five blocks, not to Manhattan.
Two sets of tire tracks.
This is a meet and greet.
Andre makes a call on his cell.
It's Yolanda. Hey, I need pictures of every car that went into the alley after the BMW.
There aren't any cameras aimed right at the entrances.
Alley backs up into massage parlors and Chinese restaurants. It's illegal workers. Every time a camera goes up, it gets pulled back down.
Can you pick up every passing vehicle on either end?
What interval?
From the time the BMW went into the alley to the first fire call to 911.
Will do. Stand by.
Burns watches Andre as he continues examining the car.
Are you who they say you are?
Who do they say I am?
You tell me. You killed a lot of perps in the last 10 years.
Andre nods.
Never shot first.
Never.
All right, let me be more precise, Detective Burns. I've never fired without just cause.
Seven dead cops? Feels like a lot of just cause.
She steps closer.
These guys are killers. So I need to know that we got each other's backs tonight. Because I got a kid at home. Doesn't need to wake up without her mother.
You wear that badge, I got your back.
Andre answers his phone.
Talk to me.
He jogs back to their car with Burns following.
Right.
Where are we going?
Uptown.
Elsewhere, a burly bald man opens a sliding door to reveal the younger gunman. The tall informant steps in front of him and walks ahead through the door. The two gunmen follow him into a dimly lit warehouse apartment, all three bringing in the bags of cocaine. Around the large living room are a few armed men and a slim blonde woman. At the far end of the room, a man in a tank top rides a stationary bike while watching a news broadcast showing footage from the Mostow crime scene. Ray and his accomplice share a look. The woman spoons some of the cocaine into a vial of liquid and shakes it. The mixture turns dark crimson.
Nice.
How much have you got?
50 kilos.
The woman, clad in a short sparkly dress and high-heeled boots, struts over to the man on the bike and shows him the vial. He gets down and approaches the tall informant.
What up, B?
What up?
This ain't usual and customary.
Nothing is tonight, man.
B gestures at the gunman.
This is Ray Jackson. This is Michael.
The bid you put out was for 30 keys. We walked in at 300.
Sometimes lightning strikes, right?
Even better when you're a burrow away from it.
Yeah, most definitely.
Look, we killed cops, but now we gotta run forever.
And get on with your negotiations and fuck your little guilt trip, word. I'm a drug dealer who hit a rival drug dealer and you're the guns I got to do it. What, you think I fucked you because someone somewhere forgot a zero? Our business doesn't attract a lot of detail-oriented motherfuckers. You don't like it, make your own moves. Or go drive an Uber. Either way, let's make this deal so I can get you America's most wanted motherfuckers out of my crib fast as I can.
The younger gunman, Michael, clenches his jaw and averts his eyes.
1 million.
Pesos? Yo, I love it when fools strike gold but don't know the market price.
50 keys cuts into 200. Going rate for a cut key in Manhattan is 32 G's. That means after a million of us, that's still 5.4 million for you.
He is one of those detail-oriented motherfuckers.
Now, officers in tactical gear, along with Andre and Burns, creep up to an apartment door, their weapons drawn. 2:04 a.m., Harlem. The front officer kicks down the door, and the team swiftly spreads out through the apartment.
Lake Novo, start one!
They barge into a bedroom, where a man and woman frantically scramble out of bed. One of the officers roughly restrains the man, shoving him to the floor and zip-cuffing him. Another cuffs the woman.
What's going on? Get off of him! No, he didn't do anything!
Hey, hey! You know if you kill him, he can't tell us anything.
Stand up. Step over here.
Andre shows the woman a picture of the SUV.
What's going on?
Is this you?
No, that is not my car.
It's registered in your name.
My ex-boyfriend, he had terrible credit, so I put it in my name. Said he sold it.
He lied.
All the time. You beat up the wrong man.
He'll live. Get him out of here.
Let's go.
Hey, you okay?
You turn around.
Andre undoes the woman's restraints. She turns around and slaps him.
Knock it off. Knock it off.
It's all right. It's all right.
He rubs his cheek.
So this ex-boyfriend of yours.
Toriano Bush. What do you do now?
Seven cops were murdered tonight.
Well, Toriano didn't do that.
He picked up these two men. We think they're the murderers.
He shows photos.
There isn't a version of this where these two aren't found. Cooperate now. Tell me something I don't know. And that's the beginning and the end of our time together.
You know, Toriano couldn't kill anyone, you know?
You said that. But he's a criminal, right?
Small time. He's wanted to get out. He's always just too deep in debt.
Is that why you left him?
Debt don't bother me.
Burns nods.
Who was Becky with the good hair?
The woman tosses her head back.
Waitress hoe at the Pan Am.
Check it.
Thank you.
Burns hurries out of the room. Andre pulls a chair over to the woman.
Sit.
She sits, and Andre turns to a nearby officer.
Give us a second.
The officer goes. Elsewhere, Burns talks on her cell.
Hey, Yolanda, get me everything you have on Toriano Bush. And get cameras up and around the Pan Am Lounge. He has a girlfriend there.
Got it.
She puts down her phone and gazes off. In Hawk Tyler's apartment, Michael checks a few wads of $20 bills, filling the Mosto tote bags.
You have any hundreds?
Brown people spend Benjamins, brown people get followed.
Weighs as much as the coke.
You're about right. A million in 20s is 110 pounds. They stay away from all canines. They go Cujo because every dollar in circulation is covered in cocaine atoms. And y'all got 50,000 of those bills in six small bags.
How do I clean it?
You don't know some dude who owns a strip club or a parking lot?
This is seven figures. Now, who do you use?
Who everybody else with seven or more digits does. Sudanese brother over in the meatpacking named Addy. Cops do. He's Switzerland.
What does that mean?
Means you're gonna take 300,000, but he can sort bank accounts, passports, whatever you need.
I heard about this dude. Exclusive.
Eyeing the woman, Michael nods to Bush.
He owe you money?
Bush owes everybody money.
Oh yeah? How much?
$17,512 as of this morning.
What are you doing?
Michael hands her cash and turns to Bush.
I just bought you Lincoln.
Bush stares between Michael and Ray and hands over his car keys.
Let's get out of here.
With Andre.
They'll never know. They'll never see me again. I promise.
She looks at the red light camera photo of Ray on Andre's cell and hands the phone back.
Evans. Probably Raymond Jackson.
Probably? Because he always wears a demon mask?
Not many white dudes born and raised where we were during World War crack.
Okay. So he's a tough guy.
Yeah, fighting his whole life. When we were kids, I watched him beat a grown man for stepping on this boy. Arvel's sneakers. This was before the army.
Arvel. Who's Arvel?
Arvel Trujillo. He and Ray, they joined up together. They just did everything together.
Is that who else is in the car?
No. Arvel was blown up in Afghanistan.
Screens display a photo of a younger, clean-shaven Ray posing with another young man, both smiling and wearing army fatigues.
The other man in that car is... It's probably Arvel's little brother, Michael. Does Ray protect him now?
Mugshots of Michael now fill the displays.
Michael's smart. You know, he could have been anything if he'd just been born somewhere else. But after Arvell was killed, Michael joined up. But I heard he attacked a sergeant.
A document scan reads, dishonorable discharge.
Thank you.
Andre stares at her. Now, a police chopper flies past the Empire State Building and swoops left over the city. 3:03 a.m. Two patrol cars barrel down a narrow street. Ray and Michael exit the parked Lincoln and cross the street hauling their loaded bags of cash. More police cars blaze past the intersection behind them as they walk. Now, a dark, slim man with a short gray beard, clad in a luxurious robe, opens a door to them.
Come on in.
They enter a huge loft apartment. The man, Addy, shuts the door behind them and locks a slide bar and two deadbolts.
You're causing quite a stir.
Wanted for the slaughter of seven officers in Brooklyn tonight are Raymond Jackson and Michael Trujillo. Jackson, 32 years old, a long history of violent crime. Trujillo, 26 years old, also with an extensive rap sheet.
Addy opens a large safe.
Put your bags in here.
They watch their mugshots broadcast on the news. Pulling his gaze away from the TV screen, Ray follows Michael to the safe. Michael places his bag on a top shelf inside the safe and steps back. Ray puts his bags on a lower shelf. Michael shifts, his shoulders slightly heaving. Ray turns to Addy.
Don't want to count it?
No one cheats the man who knows where all their money is.
Ray draws his gun.
Do not close that fucking safe.
What the fuck are you doing?
I don't buy it.
Buy what?
This guy, this place, where the fuck are we, Mike? What are we doing? This isn't us. We have a million fucking cash. You ever think we'd see that? You ever think Arvell even dreamed of this shit? Now we're just gonna give it to him, then what? He's gonna put it in the fucking safe, type, and give us some fucking gift cards? It's that easy?
Bush knew about this, dude. Exclusive. Remember, Bush heard about him.
Fucking Torianos, how all this started.
No, us not walking away is how this started. Look, Ray, I get it. None of this shit makes any sense. It ain't like anything we've ever known. But ain't no plan B I can see. They shut down the island. We can't run around with 100 pounds of stank cash. He puts his money in some accounts somewhere far from here, and then we figure out how to get to it later. Ray, put it down.
Michael lays a hand on the gun, and Ray lowers it slowly. He steps closer to Addy with a piercing gaze.
You fuck us, and I will fucking bury you where you stand.
Addy stares back, wide-eyed. Michael lowers his head, shutting his eyes. Ray walks to a table and sets down his coin. The sobriety coin bears the Roman numeral 2 inside a triangle. He bends forward, resting his arms on the table, his hands trembling.
I need a fucking scotch.
I'll pour us both one.
Frowning, Ray breathes heavily. At LMSI, facial recognition software processes a security cam image of Bush at the Pan Am.
We got a match.
Yolanda holds a phone.
We got a hit.
Bush is at the club.
Positive ID on Toriano Bush at the Pan Am.
Closest units, converge on the Pan Am lounge. Toriano Bush inside. Stay on the exits. Nobody enters until I get there.
At the Pan Am, dancers crowd the floor. Men twirl and dip their glamorously dressed female partners. Two of McKenna's men make their way through the club doors. The burlier of the two gestures toward the bar, where Bush stands across from a waitress holding her hand.
No, no, listen to me, babe. Me voy, nunca voy regresar.
Please, stop it!
The cop shoots him as he turns. His partner gestures to an approaching woman.
Hey, get the fuck back!
I'm an EMT!
I don't give a shit! Get the fuck back!
Frantic clubgoers flood out onto the sidewalk as Andre and Burns drive up. They rush in through the front doors, pushing past the exiting people.
Out of the way! Get out of the way!
away.
Watch it. Move.
Inside the car, Andre's cell phone displays an incoming call alert from LMSI. Yolanda shifts her weight as she waits on the other end of the line. The screens around her show a security cam image of the parked Lincoln.
Come on, Andre, answer your fucking phone.
Now, Byrne spots Bush.
What the fuck is this?
Hey!
Andre goes to the burly cop.
Didn't I say wait?
We disobeyed.
You disobeyed?
He didn't kill one of your brothers, so fuck if we're gonna let him get away
with it. What are you fucking stupid? He didn't kill anybody! He could have let us in, the two who did!
Burns checks her phone and steps away.
We yelled, he pulled, we shot. End of story. One down, two to go.
The waitress shoves the cop. His burly partner moves to her.
How many drinks you had tonight? How many bucks?
Hey, don't do what you're doing right now.
Get your fucking hands off of me.
The burly cop shoves Andre, and Andre drops him with a punch.
What?
Andre stares down his partner.
Officer, get the fuck out of here. Let's go.
Andre glances down at the burly cop, trying to get to his feet.
You said Bush pulled. Pull what? A fucking 38? The other two got suppressed submachine guns, and Butch was carrying a piece you only ever see in a meth addict's glove box? Or a fat cop's ankle holster?
Burns returns.
Who is that, LMSI?
Nanny. Sorry, my little girls.
Is everything all right?
No, but we'll be fine. What the fuck is going on here?
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
At the loft, Ray sits, sipping from a glass while Addie briskly types at a bank of computer screens. Michael watches at his
side. Bahamas is right for your skin color. You'll go via Miami.
326 is short.
The rest is cash. You are now Christopher James, and Ray, your new name is William Simpson.
Ray shoots him a look and sips his scotch.
Take separate buses to Miami. There's a man named Swift in Little Havana. He runs a bar at the corner of Flagler and 27th Street. He also sells passports. They'll be under your new names. Then you will pay cash for a charter boat to Nassau. There is a ski boot bag and backpack behind that door. I'll put 15 in each.
Ray jumps to his feet, aiming his gun at the door.
What was that?
It's exactly what it sounds like.
The metal door jolts on its hinges from the impact.
Whoever is at my door, you wait and you think.
Eddie strides forward as dents form in the door. Eddie checks a security monitor above the door and sees four policemen standing outside. He glances back at Michael and Ray, standing on either side of the entryway, their guns aimed. Eddie peers through the peephole.
What precinct are you from?
Lieutenant Kelly stands on the other side.
Because I'll have your fucking...
Kelly fires into the peephole through Addie's eye, sending him to the floor. Michael and Ray open fire, shooting blindly at the reinforced door. One of their bullets catches Kelly, and he collapses. Ray drags Addie back while shooting at the door. With Michael laying down cover fire, Ray props Addie against a pillar, creeps back to the entryway, throws open the closet door, and grabs the ski bag and backpack from inside. They retreat from the rain of bullets. Ray hurries to the safe and empties cash into the bags. Now, McKenna arrives at the Pan Am and faces his two men.
You two better not have fucked up.
He moves past them to Burns and Andre.
We good?
Is this my case, Captain?
This is all hands on deck, but your lead.
Now someone should tell them.
Look, they're angry. They're in pain. Butch Cole and his wife were close with Jennifer Montgomery. She didn't make it, they just pulled the plug.
10-13, we need backup!
Mr. Kelly, we're on 9-13, just fired! 10-13!
9-13, suspect Julio and Jackson here!
Andre frowns. He and Burns hurry back to their car.
Now how the fuck did Kelly find them?
At the loft, Addie shudders violently, his eye profusely bleeding.
I can't see. I can't fucking see!
Yeah, fuck you over, man, I swear.
Addie turns to Michael.
Fucking A5. What?
Shaking with spasms, Addie glances toward the computers.
It's just thumb drives.
Michael turns to see three of the glowing monitors flicker and die under the police gunfire. He spots two thumb drives, each plugged into a different computer. Michael resumes firing at the door as Ray arrives with the filled bags. He sets them down and covers Michael as he dashes to the computers, grabbing the thumb drives and returning to Addie's side.
What is it?
Cool hand.
Huh?
Cool hand. One word. Lowercase.
Get the shotgun! We gotta fucking move.
Michael runs up a flight of stairs to a landing and fires at the entryway, with Ray following. Meanwhile, one of the cops fires a shotgun at the door, ripping large holes through the locks. Michael and Ray pull themselves up onto a horizontal beam and escape through a skylight as the cops enter. The police creep forward into the loft, weapons aimed. Bringing up the rear, Kelly scans the room, perspiration glistening on his face. Now, the fugitives sprint across the street, each with one of the bags strapped to his back.
All units, suspects are 9EZ.
Right there.
On foot, vicinity of
9EZ. Don't call it in. They're ours.
Arriving at the scene, Andre follows the two men into the loading dock of a meatpacking plant. Andre and Burns hop out of their car and Ray shoots at them. They take cover behind a nearby forklift and return fire, hitting Ray in the abdomen. Michael and Ray withdraw behind a row of trucks and into the building. Inside, Ray pauses at a flight of stairs, wincing with a hand to his wound. Michael watches him.
We got split up. We're too easy to track if we're together.
No. No way, man. You need help.
Head down, eyes up.
Ray gives his friend a small smile.
I'll see you in Miami.
Michael watches him head up the stairs, turns, and runs in the opposite direction. Andre and Burns approach the building, eyes alert and guns raised. Ray staggers up another flight of stairs, clasping the handrail with one hand and aiming his gun ahead with the other. A dark red patch of blood stains his shirt over his left hip. Andre and Burns enter the building. A factory employee peeks out of a nearby doorway, crouched low. Andre taps the police badge on his belt, and the employee nods in Michael's direction. In an upstairs office corridor, an employee spots Ray and his gun. Andre looks upstairs.
Go!
Ray gestures the woman away, and she flees. Ray turns, leans unsteadily against a doorframe, and slumps to the floor. Below, Andre and Burns exchange a nod, and she walks off. Now, Andre cautiously makes his way up the stairs. Ray waits, aiming his pistol down the corridor, as his chest heaves and his body trembles. Andre slowly steps up to the landing around the corner, his weapon ready. Ray wavers, aiming his gun, and a worker suddenly emerges from a doorway. Ray impulsively shoots him. Andre comes around the corner and fires into Ray. Ray drops his gun, convulsing. Andre moves forward, checking the offices along the corridor as he passes. Approaching Ray, he kneels beside him, keeping his gun aimed at his head.
He hurt me. He ain't like me. He ain't like me.
Ray's body stops heaving, and his head lolls to the side. Andre stares at Ray's lifeless body, a deep frown on his brow. Downstairs, Burns steps into a large room with machinery and wide counters. An employee throws up his arms, and Burns lifts up a side of her jacket, showing her badge. As she turns, another worker crouches fearfully, hands on his head. Burns steps past and moves to a doorway. She enters a massive refrigerated room filled with large cuts of meat suspended on rows of hooks. She turns a corner, gun up and pointed in front of her, and walks on, glancing between the rows of animal carcasses as she goes. Michael sneaks up behind her. He strikes her over the head with his pistol, knocking her down. Her weapon slides away as he yanks her to her feet and holds her around her neck with his gun to her head.
Is Ray dead?
I hope so.
Michael!
Andre appears in front of them, aiming his weapon.
Is he dead?
Yes.
Andre steps forward.
Stop walking!
You got a clear shot. Take it. Don't worry about me.
Michael wears a pained expression.
You got lucky.
Yeah. Luckier than the civilian he just murdered. Add that to the list of cops. How many bodies stack up against you now that Ray is dead?
Don't try and get into my head, okay?
Simple truths, Michael.
And don't use my name!
Take the shot!
Stop fucking walking!
Andre stops moving toward them.
I think most of this mess is his. Your ball's deep in it now, Michael. For guys like Ray, I'm natural causes. But what about you?
Fuck you know about guys like Ray, huh? Fuck you know about guys like me.
Saw your records. Marine. Tried to follow in your brother's footsteps after he got sent home in a box. But you? Dishonorably discharged. Insubordination. I get it. Some of us are killers, Michael. But you? I think the last thing you want is to take a life for no reason.
And how you know that, huh?
She would have killed her by now.
Shoot him!
No!
Fucking shoot him!
Michael wants to talk. So come on, Michael. Let's talk.
If he wants to talk, tell him to do it without a gun to my fucking head on.
Burns, be cool!
This is fucking cool!
Just give me a second here.
None of this shit makes any sense. The manager at the spot we hit, he knew the cops were coming.
It's called a silent alarm.
No, he checked his watch before it all happened. And the first four came peacefully. I mean, one fucking knocked with his knuckles like a Jehovah's Witness, not with the side of his hand like a fucking cop.
Andre, for the love of Christ, are you really gonna entertain this shit?
300 keys, pure. I mean, what the fuck? This whole thing is filthy. You can't move that type of weight around without cartels or cops or both. And the cops shot the cleaner upstairs. Fire right through the peephole, no warning.
Andre's eyes widen.
They were there for more than just us. And right before we left, the cleaner gave me thumb drives.
Give what?
Drives. USBs and shit.
Andre listens intently.
What's on him?
Andre.
All he said was 8-5.
Stop killing pieces.
Bird, stop. Stop. Michael, look at me.
Don't fuck with me.
What's fucking with you? Facts. You shooter, I'm gonna kill you in the same breath. And everything you think you know or may have means nothing. So drop your weapon. Let's take a look at the drives.
No, I can't do that.
Michael, I'll need you to trust me.
I don't trust anybody.
You have no choice. You're not gonna escape to some island somewhere, even after they open this one. You're smart enough to know that.
Oh, I am, huh?
The world's just gonna keep closing in on you. And you can't survive this if you just give yourself up to me.
Michael turns and backs away toward the door.
No, Michael!
Releasing Burns, he slips through the door, slams it shut, seals the latch, and rushes off with his gun. Back inside.
Are you okay?
What the fuck are you doing?
Outside, Michael exits the loading dock and sprints away down the empty street. A.M. A hotel building towers in the night sky. A glowing vertical sign along the side of the building reads, Parallax. Now, Burns and Andre emerge from the plant and run across the dock. Andre checks the street and speaks into his walkie-talkie.
This is Davis. Lock down everything in a 7-block radius for White Show Beefs, Senator Circle. Positive ID on Michael Trujillo, leaving there 90 seconds ago. Trujillo has information vital to this case. He must be brought in alive.
He walks back to Burns.
Let me see.
I'm fine.
Yeah, you look it. I want to know what's on those drives.
Central, advise the units that are 84 to set up a perimeter from West 12th Street to West 19th and from 8th Avenue to the water. No one in or out.
A motorcade of police vehicles speed along a maze of streets. The cars drive into place, setting up a perimeter blockade. Officers exit their vehicles, eyes scanning the streets, while a chopper zooms overhead. Now, Michael enters the Parallax Hotel, zipping up his jacket and adjusting the strap of his backpack. He strides past the concierge desk and across the lobby, joining up with two young men, one of them shuffling unsteadily. Michael walks close behind and waits with them at the elevators, keeping his head down. He enters an elevator after them. Later, he follows one of the men down a hallway. Michael glances over his shoulder and retrieves his pistol from the back of his waistband. He holds it at his side as he walks. As the young man enters his room, Michael barges in behind him and shoves him against a wall, pressing the muzzle of the gun into the man's cheek. Michael kicks the door shut behind him.
I won't hurt you if you stay quiet. You got it? Nod.
The man nods. Holding him by the collar, Michael forces him ahead and releases him, keeping him at gunpoint. Michael slips off his backpack. He spots an open laptop on a table.
What's the password?
8CLAP1. Gotta spell the word 8. What is the number?
Michael types it in.
One word?
Michael glances at the laptop screen, then looks up at his captive.
Close your eyes.
The man shuts his eyes tightly. Michael knocks him out with the butt of his gun, and the man falls back onto the bed. Swallowing hard, Michael glances nervously around the room. At the loft, two police officers retrieve a few remaining bags of cash from Addie's safe and pass Andre on the way out. With a small frown, he watches them go. Byrne sits nearby.
Why didn't you shoot him? They told me you were fearless. The guy who kills cop killers.
I just need the truth, that's all.
You believe a cop killer?
She shakes her head, biting her lip.
Good work, Kelly. Get some rest.
Lieutenant Kelly sits with his left hand bandaged. McKenna leaves him and approaches Andre and Burns.
You took down one vicious son of a bitch.
Yeah, not before he killed an innocent civilian.
The world's a better place with that guy gone. You seen his record?
Glanced at it.
McKenna eyes him.
I knew I had the right guy for this.
All hands on deck, right? It was your boys who smoked him out of this apartment. How did Lieutenant Kelly even get here so quick?
Look at this fucking mess.
Antoine enters.
Still got one guy on the run, right?
Yeah.
It's 4:37 a.m. You got less than an hour before I gotta open the island. You haven't gotten him by then, we're all eating shit for breakfast.
Don't worry about the other perp. Andre put that motherfucker in a 7-block box. He's on borrowed time.
Antoine eyes Andre and leaves with McKenna. Andre walks past Addie's corpse, sitting slumped against the pillar. Andre approaches the bank of monitors running various programs and displaying data. His eyes narrow slightly as his gaze falls on the empty USB slots. At the hotel room, Michael plugs a USB drive into a laptop.
Michael Trujillo is still at large, but police believe he is surrounded somewhere inside the meatpacking district.
He enters the password, Cool Hand. A list of files pops up within a window. On a TV screen nearby, Antoine appears on the news. Michael clicks on one of the files, and a spreadsheet opens, displaying a long list of dates, names, and dollar amounts. He closes it and opens a similar document titled 7 a.m.
Without your patience and assistance, and I'll add the boldness of Mayor Drum's idea to close Manhattan in the first place, we wouldn't have already neutralized two of the three men responsible for the ambush at Mostel's that claimed the lives of eight of our finest.
He turns to the TV.
A gunman identified as Raymond Jackson and his accomplice, Toriano Bush, Both died resisting arrest in the early hours of this morning. Both men were armed and dangerous. My brave officers at the 85th Precinct and the entire NYPD have worked tirelessly to track down these men within 5 hours.
Michael scrolls back and forth until he finds a spreadsheet labeled 85.
85.
The file displays more dates and dollar amounts, but contains five-digit numbers instead of names.
Badge numbers. Every number's a cop.
Michael's eyes widen, and he hurries from the table. Later in a bathroom, a towel, small pair of scissors, and a razor lie on a counter surrounded by small tufts of hair. A shaving brush sits nearby, still covered in foam. Now Michael strides down the hallway, dressed in a suit and tie. Clean-shaven and wearing the young man's glasses, Michael loosens his collar, carrying his backpack at his side. Back in the room, the young man struggles against restraints and spits out a gag.
Help! Help! Help!
Downstairs, Michael exits an elevator and sees two uniformed cops approaching the front desk. He retreats around a corner.
Can I speak to the director of security, please?
Sorry, officer, just one moment. Reception. What?
Michael heads into a service hallway. Slinging his backpack over his shoulder, he takes out his machine gun and hides it under his jacket. He tosses the glasses aside. A hotel employee steps out behind him.
Sir, you can't be back here.
With Andre and Burns.
Where are we going?
We gotta bring him in alive.
Hotel sounds like Trujillo. Directional flight between the kitchen and rear.
That's 13th Street, lock him in. Nobody approach him, he's mine!
Andre and Burns break into a sprint. Elsewhere, Michael emerges onto a street.
Sir, stop! Hold it right there! Show me your hands!
Michael runs from the police barricade behind him, and a cop opens fire. A patrol car zooms around a corner ahead of him, the passenger cop leaning out his window as he shoots. Michael returns fire and dashes into an alley.
Take the car, cut him off on the other side!
Arriving at the alley, Andre hops out of the car chasing Michael on foot, and Burns takes his place in the driver's seat. A chopper searchlight shines down on Michael as he runs into an intersection, slamming into the side of a moving bus. A cop car comes barreling toward him. Andre lifts him out of the way, taking the brunt of the hit, rolling over the windshield and onto the ground. Another cruiser arrives, and a policeman gets out, drawing his weapon.
Don't shoot!
Staggering away without his bag, Michael looks back to see Andre disarming the officer. Following Michael into another alley, Andre draws his gun and peers down through an open loading door leading to a basement. Now, Michael hurries through a cramped storage area filled with loaded shelves and bundles of hanging cables. He throws his weight against a door, moving a stack of boxes piled high on the other side. He shoves his way through, moving on, with Andre following. Michael now runs along a narrow kitchen corridor lined with racks of utensils that he flings behind him into Andre's path. Andre dodges the falling utensils and slides along the floor to evade a shelf as it comes crashing down. Breaking his way onto a restaurant floor, Michael shoots at the front door and crashes through it. He scrambles to his feet and runs out into traffic, with Andre still following. Driving in the opposite direction, Burns spots them running down the center of the street and skids into a U-turn. She accelerates, overtaking Andre and speeding after Michael. She veers through oncoming traffic, narrowly avoiding cars in her path. Michael runs onto a sidewalk, and Burns swerves in pursuit, crashing through a planter as she follows him. Andre trails them, sprinting to keep up. A helicopter searchlight finds Michael as he runs down the sidewalk. Cops open fire from a courtyard as he runs past. Burns gains on Michael as he veers back toward the street. Burns turns to follow and nearly mows him down as she careens through a fruit stall and into a parked car. Michael charges across another intersection. Michael spots a subway station and runs toward it. Gunfire rains down from the chopper, riddling the street near his feet with bullets. Michael vaults over a railing and topples down the subway stairs.
Don't shoot! Don't shoot!
Andre runs through the searchlight. Michael flies past the ticket booth, leaps over the turnstiles, and flees down another stairway, shoving aside people in his path. Andre follows, rushing down the stairs. Oh! Ah! cars converge at the entrance to the subway station. Burns, now also on foot, runs down the stairs. Andre sprints onto a platform, spotting Michael darting into a waiting train. Andre squeezes between the closing train doors, holding them open. Andre slowly steps into the train, his face and neck glistening with sweat and his eyes alert. Elsewhere, teams of officers rush down the entrance to the station. Now, Andre takes a step back out of the train and sees Michael do the same a few doors down. The two men lock eyes. Michael's shoulders and chest rise and fall with his breath as Andre stares at him unblinking. Andre's eyes widen as he sees an officer run onto the platform, and Michael follows his gaze. In unison, they step back into the train and the doors close behind them. More officers converge on the platform as the train begins to move. Michael crouches out of view. Andre calmly watches the passing platform and turns away from the windows with a determined look. In the adjoining train car, Michael gets up and walks. Andre now lifts up one side of his jacket, showing the passenger his badge.
Police! Police, don't move! Don't move! Don't move! Clear, clear! Clear the doorway! Clear the doorway! Clear the doorway!
YPD, take cover!
Michael walks from one car to the next, his pistol in hand. Passengers scurry in the opposite direction, and Andre pushes his way past them as he follows his target. Michael slows as he crosses the final car, commuters fearfully rushing past him on their way out.
Clear! Clear!
Andre enters through the sliding door, his gun pointed at Michael's back.
Drop it!
Michael turns around and aims his weapon at Andre.
You're the only cop tonight who speaks first and shoots second.
It's fucking morning, and you killed 8 of us.
Not all 8 were clean.
Who cares?
You do.
How do you know I'm any different?
Because you would have shot me by now.
Where those drives we were talking about?
I stashed them.
Okay.
Andre moves closer.
Give them to me and I'll keep you alive.
No. You want the drives, you let me go.
If you don't walk out with me, you'll be carried out by others. Michael, your only hope is to tell the truth. Pray to God for forgiveness. And make peace with the fact that you may die in prison.
Shooting you sounds a whole lot better right now.
You don't want my face in this dirty subway to be the last things you ever see.
If I die, you'll never find out what's on those drives.
They stand a few feet apart, guns trained on each other.
I may not find the drives, but I will find out why the night happened.
But could you prove it?
I only have to prove it to myself.
Michael presses his lips together, blood marks on the side of his forehead and cheek, and his gun hand trembles.
Come on, Michael.
Michael's thumb shifts around the gun, and his chest heaves.
Come on.
Michael lowers his gun and his gaze.
Okay.
Michael raises his eyes to Andre.
Okay.
Andre holds out his left hand, and Michael surrenders his gun. A bullet rips into Michael's chest, and he drops.
Cease fire! Cease fire! Cease fire!
Burns enters the car, slowly lowering her gun. Seething, Andre holsters his own gun.
What the fuck? What the fuck, man? He was surrendering. He was giving himself up.
He was gonna shoot you.
You didn't see the gun down? You didn't fucking see the gun down?
I thought he was gonna shoot.
She gets out her walkie-talkie as Andre kneels and checks Michael. Andre feels Michael's wrist for a pulse, and Michael slowly opens his eyes.
Central, this is homicide court.
Staring up at Andre, Michael presses something into one of the detective's hands.
Be advised, we have shots fired on the 6th train coming into Grand Central. Suspect is down. Suspect is down.
Go ahead.
Michael tightly grasps Andre's hands, nodding with a deep frown.
Central.
Go ahead.
Central, can you copy? Central.
Michael's eyes stare off, and his head drops back to the floor as a tear rolls down his face.
Central, advise if you receive my transmission. Shit.
Andre glances back at Burns as she fumbles for her phone. Turning back, he removes the thumb drive from Michael's hand and slumps back against a pole, still holding onto one of Michael's blood-smeared hands. Burns' phone notification bar reads no service, and she returns the phone to her pocket. She sees Andre seated on the floor, holding Michael's hand. Burns clings to a pole and rests her head against it. Andre glares at her. He looks away, staring off, pensively. He shuts his eyes. Later, he and Burns emerge onto the concourse at Grand Central Station. Officers pat them on the back as they walk.
Is he gone?
What do you think?
I think they called the right man for the job. Hey.
Andre shoots Antoine a look and walks off.
Congratulations, Detective.
Thank you, sir.
Andre takes out his phone and stops walking. Frowning, he turns back to see Burns surrounded by officers engaged in conversation.
Hey.
What's up?
This fucking thing is dead.
Oh.
Can I borrow yours?
Yeah, of course.
I'll be getting right back.
She hands him her phone, and he steps away. He taps and accesses her call history, finding an outgoing call to Kelly shortly after an incoming call from LMSI. He stands frozen in place as Lieutenant Kelly now approaches him with a smile.
Good work, Detective.
He slaps Andre on the back and joins Burns.
Great job, Burns.
Thanks, Kelly. How's the hand?
Okay.
Andre turns and takes slow, deliberate steps toward them.
Voicemail.
He eyes her with a suspicious stare, handing back her phone.
It's a long night. You get some rest.
Yeah, you too. Go hug that daughter of yours.
Burns nods with a faint smile. Andre turns and walks away across the sprawling concourse. Two more cops pat him on the shoulder as he heads for the exit. Keeping his gaze fixed straight ahead, he steps out, passing several groups of police officers on the sidewalk. Walking with a slight limp, he crosses the street beneath a pale dawn sky. The emergency lights of numerous parked police cruisers reflect against the glistening pavement.
Manhattan reopened at 7:05 this morning after a night of carnage that saw eight police officers
and two civilians.
Mayor Brown made an emergency return from the first one to oversee the successful conclusion of the manhunt. He's currently visiting
the manhunt. Flooded by the NYPD in what looked and felt like a military invasion.
Later, a luxury SUV pulls into the driveway of a two-story suburban house with a neat lawn and American flag hanging on the porch. 7:42 a.m. Now, McKenna enters the house, speaking on a cell phone.
What's up?
God damn it. Okay, all right, calm down. Just come over to my place.
Yeah. I understand. We'll figure something out.
He stops in his tracks.
I gotta go. I got a visitor.
At the kitchen counter, Andre sets down a mug.
What's a gun down here?
He gestures aside. his own gun held low and pointed at McKenna. On the counter in front of him are his badge and the two thumb drives. The captain puts down his keys, places his holster on a small counter nearby, and takes a cautious step back. Andre smirks.
Who's on the phone?
It's my wife.
McKenna grabs a stool.
She's a nurse. Shift just started. And that's the story of our married life.
He sits down across the counter from Andre. Andre picks up a thumb drive.
Got it on Mastos. Was your partner. Mastos was your vault. The 85 was armored security, moving drugs around the city in NYPD vehicles. Last night was just fucking bad luck on every level. A rival hits Mastos at the same time your boys drop by to move a load of coke. Running the men with training die. Badly.
McKenna nods, stone-faced.
Those men with the training escape, sell the drugs, and clean the money, coincidentally, with the same laundry you use. And you scorch earth, trying to cover it all up.
Andre purses his lips, twirling the thumb drive in his fingers.
You're really good.
Not good enough.
Not all the cops killed last night were a part of it.
Clean and dirty, they're all dead. Because of you.
Glancing aside, McKenna nods.
So you know, this is not about Cadillacs and fucking Rolexes. Material bullshit. Not for me, not for most of my guys. It's about having a life.
He leans forward onto the counter.
My first month running the 85, I went to two of my cops' funerals. First one went 60 miles an hour into a bridge abutment. His blood alcohol was 0.25. Second guy drank himself to death, too. Cirrhosis. Three of my cops had their homes foreclosed on. Another guy lost his apartment. Shitty landlord doubled the rent. The divorce rate in the 85 was over 70%. This is about my cops staying married, raising their kids, not having to spend 4 hours a day sitting in traffic, crawling to and from a city they can't afford to live in. A city that actively fucking dislikes them. But a city that they protect with their lives every fucking day.
Andre lowers his eyes.
That's what this is about.
McKenna leans back on his stool.
I tell you what, anybody tells you money can't buy happiness is full of shit. And the A5 is proof. Frankie Burns is proof.
Did you put her on this just to make sure I did your bidding?
I put her on this because she might be as good as you. And she's got everything to lose.
Andre lays a hand over his badge, his fingers curling around the edges.
Three guys murdered my father. He took two with him, but the third. He hit my dad so many times. He broke every bone in his face. That's why we had to have a closed casket.
McKenna's mouth opens.
Guy told the judge he didn't even remember doing it. He was so jacked, so high on cocaine and angel dust.
The drugs have always been there. And they always will be.
And people will always die because of that blood. That blood cannot be on the badge.
McKenna looks pointedly at the drives, frowning.
You can't prove where those flash drives came from.
Andre cocks his head with a smirk.
And nobody is going to take the stand against me. So if you go down this road, Andre, you're on your own. You'll be looking over your shoulder the rest of your life.
I know.
Andre calmly stares back at the captain.
Or you could just look the other way.
I'd rather look the devil in the eye.
McKenna's shoulders rise with a deep breath. His eyes dart to a window where Kelly creeps outside. Andre is on his feet in a flash, returning Kelly's fire through a back door. He shoots Kelly down and fires at the now-armed McKenna, who trips backward through a doorway. Busco and his partner burst through the front door, firing into the kitchen. Andre takes cover behind a cabinet and shoots at Busco, hitting him in the shoulder and through the forehead. Busco buckles to the floor. Andre steps out from behind the cabinet. He slowly approaches the entrance hallway, his gun raised. Buchko's partner waits, crouched around the corner. The cop darts out with his gun aimed, and Andre shoots him twice, dropping him. Andre moves his aim back to Buchko, then slowly withdraws his weapon to his chest. He cautiously starts to backtrack into the kitchen. McKenna stands in the living room on the other side of the wall. His right hand, still holding his gun, rests on the mantel, while the other is pressed to a bleeding wound on his abdomen.
I get you! You wouldn't ask if you didn't know.
Andre reloads his pistol.
Hurts like a motherfucker, right?
McKenna's body shakes.
I'll live.
Andre points his gun at the wall separating them.
You can if you give yourself up. It's the only choice available to you right now.
Maybe.
Andre lowers his weapon and steps closer to the wall, listening intently. McKenna lifts his gun hand from the mantle and steadies himself. His eyes rove across the common wall, and he vaguely aims his weapon toward it. On the other side, Andre smoothly drops to one knee. He takes aim at the wall. McKenna fires through the wall above Andre's head. Andre moves forward in a crouch, shooting low and hitting his target. Andre pats his coat pocket and lets his hand drop to his lap. He rises to his feet, staying close to the wall. His gun up, Andre swiftly steps into the living room. He sees McKenna kneeling on the floor, slumped forward, and resting his gun muzzle on the carpet. McKenna tries to stand.
Don't do it!
Now up on one knee, McKenna lifts his eyes to Andre. McKenna drops his gaze, giving a resigned nod. He fires on Andre, and Andre immediately fires back, sending McKenna to the floor on his back. His jaw clenched, Andre approaches the motionless McKenna. He stands over him, gun pointed down at McKenna's lifeless body. Andre kneels beside him, staring down, studying him. Behind Andre, Byrne steps out, her gun pointed at his back.
He's gone. It's over. Put your gun down.
He straightens and holds up his hands.
I'm gonna turn around and face you, Burns.
No.
Andre stands up and carefully places his gun down on a table.
I'm gonna turn around.
He turns to face her, arms raised. Trembling, she reveals the thumb drives in her grasp.
I have the drives.
I copied them. They're already out in the world.
Burns gives a quick glance outside.
You're going down, Burns. Every dirty cop in the 85 is going down. You pull that trigger, you get life. Your daughter doesn't need to go out without her mother.
They lock eyes. Andre calm and resolute, and Burns wavering. She lowers her gun, tears streaming down her cheeks. She sets down the weapon and the thumb drives.
Badge too.
Burns stares down at her badge as she removes it from her belt. She puts it down and holds up her hands. She turns around, and Andre cuffs her wrists behind her back. Burns nods to herself. Later, Andre leads her down the steps from a porch and walks her along the sidewalk as several police cars converge on the street in front of McKenna's house. Andre walks Burns out into the street, holding his badge overhead. A pair of policemen escort Burns to their cruiser, and more cops head into the house. Andre watches Burns go, his expression somber. Later, Andre's car moves along the Manhattan Bridge. Inside the car, the blood-stained thumb drive sits in the center console. Andre is reflected in the rearview mirror, gazing forward pensively. Now, Lower Manhattan is framed by a bright morning sky, the East River, and the Brooklyn and Manhattan bridges. Credits appear. Directed by Brian Kirk. Screenplay by Adam Mervis and Matthew Michael Carnahan. Story by Adam Mervis. Produced by Anthony Russo, PGA. Joe Russo, PGA. Mike LaRocca, PGA. Produced by Robert Simmons. Gigi Pritzker. Produced by Chadwick Boseman, PGA. Logan Coles, PGA. Executive Producer Adam Vogelson, Executive Producers Rachel Shane, Adrian Alperovich, Executive Producers Wang Zhongjun, Wang Zhongli, Felice B, Executive Producers Mark Kameen, Todd McCurrath. Director of Photography Paul Cameron, ASC, Production Designer Greg Berry, edited by Tim Morrell, Costume Designer David Robinson. Music by Henry Jackman and Alex Belcher. Music supervisor, Jason Marquis. Co-producers Malcolm Gray, Melissa Rucker. Casting by A.V. Kaufman, CSA. Chadwick Boseman. A title appears, 21 Bridges. Sienna Miller. Stefan James. Keith David. Alexander Siddick, with Taylor Kitsch and J.K. Simmons. Louis Cancelmai, Victoria Cartagena. STX Films, MWM Studios, and Wahi Brothers Pictures present an AGBO Films / Exception Content Production. Credits roll. STX Entertainment did not receive any payment or other consideration or enter into any agreement for the depiction of tobacco products in this film. Copyright 2019 STX Productions, LLC. All rights reserved. The persons and events in this motion picture are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons or events is unintentional. This motion picture is protected under laws of the United States and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. This film has been described by Pixelogic Media with funding from STX, voiced by John Bentley. AGBO Films. Distributed by STX Films.